Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1. With Olay Total Effects Age-Defying Day Cream. Over 100 awards without paying hundreds of euros.
You can text us to 51551 and you can find us on Twitter at Miriam O'Call. Well, this week news broke that Gardaí were on beautiful Valentia Island in Kerry asking questions of locals. They've also been taking DNA samples from people in lots of different places. It's all part of an ongoing Gardaí review into the Kerry babies case. It's almost 35 years since the country was convulsed by the story of Joanne Hayes and the Kerry babies. So why did this case have such an impact? And is it right that after all this time, the entire trauma of it all is being dredged up? Well, to discuss all of this morning, I'm joined by writer and journalist Martina Devlin, whose new book, Truth and Dare, has just come out. Journalist Anne Lucy, who's become a complete expert on the case, and academic Tom Inglis, who's the former professor of sociology at UCD across the road here, and he also wrote a book on the Kerry babies case called Truth, Lies and Power. You're all very welcome. Thanks so much, Anne. You came the furthest. You came from Killarney. First of all, before we go back, what has been happening this week and what's the reaction been in Kerry?
Well, since Monday last, as you said, Gardaí have been on Valentia Island, a team of 20 Gardaí, and carrying out door-to-door inquiries, knocking on doors and asking people what they remember from 34 years ago, from April 1984. And just to put it in context, these are actually the first door-to-door inquiries since that period on the Kerry babies case. And we are told that Valentia, which is an island, but it has a bridge in near Carrigrohane, that it has been singled out because of its proximity to White Strand, where the 5-day-old baby was found with 28 stab wounds, neck broken and probably choked, a crime that has never been resolved.
For people who are listening this morning who know absolutely nothing about the Kerry babies, Anne Lucy, tell them briefly. I was with you this January actually for Primetime on a very windswept White Strand when this case was opened, reviewed again. Tell us what happened though 34 years ago.
Well, April, somebody was out jogging or looking for his cows. It was a man called Mr. Griffin, and he came across the body of a baby, which was said to be newborn at the time, but we've been told this January that actually it was 5 days old. And horrifically stabbed, as it turned out. A search, Gardaí became involved. Local undertaker christened the child Baby John, as he is subsequently known. There was a massive search for the child's mother. Inquiries singled out a woman from Abbeydourney, 8 kilometres and 2 peninsulas away, because she had presented herself to St. Catherine's Hospital in Tralee, saying she had miscarried and in fact she had given birth. And the whole Kerry baby saga began then, when she was wrongfully accused of being the mother of the Carrigrohane baby.
And we now, Joanne herself had a baby. Just explain that as well.
Joanne herself, it transpired, had a baby. It was also a baby boy. She had buried it on the family farm, or she had concealed it where she said she had given birth, in a field, and she placed the baby in a plastic bag in a pool. And the family were questioned. Joanne was accused of murder at one stage. It was a charge that was withdrawn some months later. The family were accused of, you were talking, 2 brothers, a sister, and an aunt, and her mother was also questioned in her own home, and they were accused of concealing information, basically. And Gardaí became convinced that Joanne was the mother of the Carrigrohane baby. They didn't find out that she was the mother actually of the baby, of another baby, as she had said originally, but they maintained their position that she had given birth to 2 babies.
And it's important to point out that she got an apology eventually at the beginning of this year, when this case proved new DNA could prove that she had nothing to do with that baby, John.
Yeah, she did get an apology, but I mean, it was known from very early on that you had two different blood groups involved, and it was the child in Carrigrohane was A, and Joanne's and her the father of the child, of Joanne's child, was blood group O. So you knew from the very start. So the theory became that she was pregnant by 2 different men at the same time. And this bizarre line of thinking, and as well the treatment of the Hayes family, which had the whole of Kerry up in arms. You had a front page editorial in the Kerryman of the time, and I have a copy of it, of in October 1984, saying the guard, the credibility was at stake. And after that, then you had a tribunal which ostensibly was to inquire into the handling. This was its remit, to inquire into the handling of the case and how different members of the Hayes family could have made these statements that they were involved in the killing of the Cara Sevine baby, and what induced them to do
and
so.
And in fact, in the end, it was a botched guard operation.
It became an inquisition into morality and into woman's morality, and it also focused more on the baby in Tralee than it ever did on the baby in Cara Sevine. And now, 34 years later, we have the reopening of the inquiry. 9 months, we have 9,000 investigative hours put into it already. We have 225 leads. We have now door-to-door inquiries of the 400 or so houses on Village Island. Probably half of those are holiday homes. And now, it's not going to stop at that. These will not be the last of the door-to-door inquiries, the Superintendent Flora Murphy told me this week. He said other areas will be targeted. And the reason being that the murder squad who were in Cara Sevine in 1984 only managed to do Cara Sevine town and a little of the area called Over the Water, which is the broad area where the White Strand and the child was found. And it's a courting area, actually, the White Strand. And this hasn't become very well sort of known, but the White Strand was a courting area for couples with cars at the time. And that area was canvassed, Cara Sevine town, the local girls' secondary school, but they only had 2 weeks. The murder squad only had 2 weeks when they were called up to the definite line of inquiry in Tralee around April the 30th.
And they, of course, Tom Inglis, you got very interested in the story. They'd their mind up anyway, didn't they? That they felt Joanne was the mother of John.
They were desperately seeking a scapegoat because something shameful had happened in Kerry, and the three leading detectives in the murder squad were from Kerry. And that's the reason why they came down in the first place, because after 2 weeks, the local Gardaí had not been making any progress. I think when we think about all of the nuances and the details of the Kerry babies case, we have to ask the question, why will this story not go away? And I think the reason for that is because it's a story of Catholic Irish society at that time. It is a time when 1 in 20 babies were born outside of marriage. If you did give birth to a baby outside of marriage, the likelihood would be that you would be put into a Magdalene home, a mother and baby home, etc. It was a time when contraceptives had just been made available. It was a time when Joanne Hayes, if you like, caught up in a new culture of sex, love and romance, had an affair with a married man but didn't use contraceptives and became pregnant. And so it has all those elements of understanding what the transformation was in Ireland at that time. It is also a story of the police and the powers that the state had given to the murder squad to extract confessions from Republicans and criminals when progress was slow. It is a story about, if you like, patriarchal society. And I think Nell McCafferty, in her book, really got to the bottom of that, of that male thinking. If you think of it, that all these men gathered down in Tralee to investigate what this woman had done. I mean, it's mind-boggling. But it's also a story for me, and I've seen this more on reflection, that it was a story about the church, insofar as it was a Catholic Irish society, and in a way, the church did not defend Joanne Hayes. It stood idly by and let the forces of the police and then the judiciary do what they did to Joanne Hayes. But when we think of the investigation by the guards and then the tribunal and the questioning that Joanne Hayes was put through, that you begin to realise that this was a story of what the state does to you. It is not a question we have always thought in Ireland about what the church does to you. In this case, the state, through the police, the state, through the judiciary, investigated the, if you like, the private life of a woman and made her into an infamous woman. But we realise that it's not kind of like serendipitous. This was about the state defending itself. When somebody had, if you like, made the guards lose their honour and respect, the state immediately set about defending the honour of the guards and then the judiciary acting to defend the honour of the guards. And it is a reminder that this is something that the state can do to you. And I think if we're going to have a debate, and just to finish, this story is also about the importance of the media. Without Don Buckley and Joe Joyce's investigation and its expose in the Sunday Independent, would have been nothing about this case. And dare I say it, if the Caris Iveagh baby had been blood group O, Joanne Hayes might be in prison at the moment. There are all those coincidences. But without the media, and within the media, there was a recognition by the leading journalists at the time, you know, from Niall McCafferty to Michael O'Regan, Ger Colleran, Barry O'Halloran from in here in RTE, and Gene Kerrigan. These were top journalists, and they realised that this was a story that was way beyond simply the guards messing up in an investigation. So for those reasons, the story will not go away. And yes, I feel sorry for Joanne Hayes and I feel sorry for the villagers in Abidorny who once again wake up and find, oh my God, they're at it again. But this is a story that which we come to know and understand ourselves and what it is that we are part of and how we can turn a blind eye to what the state does to us.
That was a super exposition. Also, he mentioned there, Tom mentioned patriarchy. When you look back now, we were obviously all too young to cover it, Martina, but was it misogyny? I mean, there was a lot of men involved targeting one very young, frail young woman.
Niall McCafferty said Irish womanhood itself was on trial there. And I went into the National Library and Pearse Library and read the contemporaneous reports of what happened. And it was mind-boggling. What I took from it was the extraordinary power of the judge and that this was accepted. Clearly, there were misgivings at the time because Abidorny neighbours, women's groups, men and women were protesting. And the judge, Judge Kevin Lynch, said that he would jail people who protested. And he reminded protesters that only he had the right to let them out of jail. So it was, you know, he was more or less saying it's for an undefined term. And to me, that was an extraordinary abuse of position. It was legal, of course, but the idea that citizens who were clearly uneasy about what was happening to this vulnerable 25-year-old woman couldn't even stand there with a placard. He said you couldn't even have a silent protest. And I think, you know, now looking back, we like to think we've given up our Isle sins. We've shut down the Magdalen laundries and the mother and baby homes. Divorce and contraception are no longer illegal. The abortion reform is coming down the tracks quite soon. And we like to tell ourselves it's a very different Ireland. But I sometimes wonder, is it? And I think the veil of official Ireland blows aside sometimes and shows us there's still progress to be made. And we saw that this year with the cervical cancer scandal when if Vicky Phelan hadn't refused to sign a non-disclosure agreement with the outside the law courts, we wouldn't know very much about it. The other thing about the cervical cancer scandal, which shows there are still entrenched misogynistic attitudes, was the Scali report, which was excellent. You know, unlike many previous reports, including the Lynch report, it wasn't a whitewash. And something that he said, that he highlighted in the report, was the consultant who said to the relative of a dead woman, "Nuns don't get cervical cancer."
But look, let's listen to Tom McSweeney at the time. You were talking there, Tom Inglis, here about, you know, the reporting and journalists. But as the Kerry Babies inquiry got underway, just for listeners to bring them back, Tom McSweeney was reporting for Here RTE, and he's describing the court proceedings way back on January the 20th, 1985.
Since 2:30 last Wednesday afternoon, the Kerry Babies inquiry has been going through its most harrowing phase, the evidence and cross-examination of Joanne Hayes. Frequently, she has broken down in tears under questioning from lawyers for the Gardaí. Her ordeal on the witness stand and the fact that the questioning seemed at times to involve matters with little apparent relevance to the inquiry has led some people to ask, was it all necessary, and couldn't her cross-examination have been handled more sensitively? Tom McSweeney has been in Tralee since the inquiry began. He's been describing what the proceedings are like.
First come the well-paid senior counsel, said to be on up to £500 a day, some of them. Barristers and solicitors, carrying voluminous amounts of documents. The authoritative figure of the head of the tribunal, Mr. Justice Kevin Lynch. Then come the detectives and uniformed Gardaí, all to be liberally photographed. There's more excitement as Joanne Hayes arrives. The cameramen move forward, and for the umpteenth time she's pictured entering the tribunal. A small but determined-looking figure, clad always in jeans, sweater and anorak. Sometimes almost hidden behind the taller members of her family, friends and workers from the Tralee Sports Centre who accompany her. Between those groups, many members of the public have been hurrying in, looking for seats. At times, there's been a queue outside the council chamber where the hearing is going on, and anyone leaving has found their seat quickly taken. Inside the council chamber, 25-year-old Joanne Hayes has gone through 8 hours of questioning, and there have often been more men in the public gallery than women. Around the half-circle table, the legal team sit, their papers covering the polished surface, facing Mr. Justice Lynch, who has at times intervened with the senior counsel on a number of points. To the right, Miss Hayes sits, her chair in a dais raised up so that she is clearly visible throughout the courtroom. Several times she's broken down, sobbed and cried, and said she found it stressful to hear the personal details of her life being revealed in court.
Tom McSweeney there. And you mentioned earlier, Tom, of course, Nell McCafferty's brilliant book on this, A Woman to Blame. Unfortunately, Nell just couldn't be with us this morning. But we're going to listen to her here. It's just about 2 minutes where at the time she was covering the case for the Irish Press. And here she speaks about her feelings regarding the inquiry.
I am concerned, as everybody is concerned, at the seemingly immodest wealth of detail that has been provided about Joanne Hayes' body, mind, soul and heart since she is not on trial and has not been accused of anything. There are things in this tribunal that are not yet lay people find difficulty in understanding, but I'm sure when the findings are published that Judge Lynch will explain why certain questions were asked in court and why certain statements were allowed by him to be made. For example, I don't understand why Jeremiah Locke was asked if he knew whether he was the father of his wife's children. Mrs. Locke is not a character in this case. I don't understand why, if they're discussing Joanne Hayes' relationship with a man or men in 1983, that we have to know whether or not she was a virgin. I don't understand why Mr. Martin Kennedy made remarks about women workers in Tralee Sports Complex drinking after their work with married men, given especially the fact that women of a certain age, say anyone over 25 and men, would find it difficult to have a drink in Ireland with any person but a married man. But I think one of the reasons for the unease and disquiet is our so far inability to understand why certain questions are asked and what right certain lawyers have to ask them and what relevance it could possibly have to the inquiry. And in that context, it's interesting. And it's this adversarial nature of questioning necessary. For example, your heart could not but break when you hear the questions and the tone of the questions put to Joanne Hayes about the night on which she gave birth alone in a field. The questioning was aggressive. At one stage it was put to her that she had in effect murder in her heart while the child was in her womb. There has not been overwhelming evidence of mercy and compassion, except for the yellow roses that have been sent her in such abundance by women who never knew her, who don't know what happened, who have yet made no judgment, but who have indicated that motherhood in certain social conditions entails pain, panic and fear, and that this requires an approach on all sides of mercy and compassion, and it has so far only been demonstrated by yellow roses sent from women who don't know her.
The indomitable Nell McCarthy there. Go on, you weren't going to speak, Anne Lucy.
Well, I was going to refer also to a wonderful account there. I was going to refer to something Tom said about it wasn't just the church, and he's so right, and it about being the state and all the rest of it. I see what happened in Cathair Sévin and subsequently what happened in 1985 in that inquisition that took place in Tralee directly in line with the divisive, the terribly divisive referendum in 1983 that inserted the amendment into the Constitution, and the absolute unleashing of, I don't think I knew the term misogyny then, but I knew what it meant because I campaigned against the referendum, but I also, or against the amendment, but I also attended meetings where you had the most vicious attitude to women, not just by the state, but by prominent people in small towns like doctors and solicitors. And so you had the state, and you had, now, as Martina said, we've had the Scali report into just how some consultants treat women. But you had all that in 1983. So society was changing at the time. Tom is right. It was more sexually liberal. Now, Joanne Hayes, I don't know why she didn't use contraception, but I could guess it was because contraception was not available. If you lived in Kerry, for instance, you had to go to Cork, to the Cork Family Planning Clinic that was set up. If you were a married woman, you often had to have your husband's permission. I know of two instances where two doctors they rang the woman's husband to ask him, did he know his wife was looking for contraception? Now, this was 1983-84. So you had one at 20 born outside marriage, perhaps. But what is never mentioned, perhaps because of blushes it would occasion, is that since about the early 70s, and I base this on my own observation because I've never seen the statistics, but you had an increasing number of what we called in Kerry hafta marriages. In other words, people were highly pregnant when they got married. So people were having sex outside marriage, and it wasn't just that they were producing children unwed, they were also barely wed when they had them. So you had a much changing society.
While the Kerry baby story is about loads of different things, it is essentially, as Martina said, a story about women. And that's why it'll be told again and again. And I think you're right that what is, the key issue is when Joanne Hayes fell in love with the married man, that she could have had, she did say that she had access to contraceptives, but she felt that it was interfering with her love for Jeremiah. Mm. So this was love in very peculiar circumstances. When she became pregnant the second time, it seems to me that there was a hope that if she had two babies with Jeremiah, whereas he had only one a baby with his own wife, that there might be some moral imperative on him to leave his wife for Joanne. This is peculiar.
She actually used the phrase, I had a baby for him. She for used him. It twice, for him, yes.
And then she went back into this, when she realised that she was pregnant a second time, she went into a depression, she was isolated, and she was not recognised. Everybody must have known that Joanne Hayes was pregnant, but nobody recognised it because they turned a blind eye. Mm. So again, this is part of society. Now, we can talk about the state, the media, etc., the police. But then, in a way, people just owned her. They wouldn't recognise her. Mm-hmm. They had this mentality, I think, once bitten, you could be pregnant outside of marriage. Once, become pregnant a second time and we will shun you.
And yet and yet, Tom, we were talking earlier, and I know when I was down for prime time with you, Anne, earlier this year, Abby Dorney, They've been very loyal to Joanne. And even now, the great news is apparently Joanne is doing great. Mm-hmm. I don't know how she feels about the Gardaí reopening this case, etc. Mm-hmm. But she's done great. And even at the time, you mentioned the yellow flat roses mm-hmm. that people sent to her. Mm-hmm. So there were people who cared mm-hmm. for her. And there's one woman, just before I speak to you, Martina, called Marguerite Egan. Tell me about her, because we have a little clip of her.
She was the head of the Tralee Women's Group.
At the time, wasn't it?
And she was a very brave woman. And she was involved. A lot of women's groups protested outside the council meetings where the tribunal was taking place, because they were absolutely shocked with the line of questioning. And they came
from Cork. So the judge shut them down, though.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, but also he threatened at one stage to jail Marguerite Egan herself when she tried to hand in a statement. I think at that stage the tribunal had moved to Dublin and she wanted to hand in a letter, and he asked her, was she part of that raucous women's group or people outside protesting? She said she was protesting, but she didn't yell. She wanted to hand in a statement on behalf of the women of Ireland. And the judge said, well, what have the women of Ireland to do with this? And he said she could end up in Mountjoy if she persisted. And he told her to go away and have sins and sit down.
This is our last clip. It's only a minute. It's Marguerite Egan at the time explaining her feelings about the inquiry.
Our group and the individuals in the group have been talking among ourselves and to other women around Tralee about the case going on at the moment. And what we're getting back from people is sort of a swell of emotion, really, and feeling of great sympathy and concern for Joanna Hayes and what she's going through at the moment. People are concerned about the line of questioning being pursued, and a lot of people are just questioning the relevance and the necessity for such detail and intimate questioning. And it's very reminiscent of the type of questioning that occurs in rape cases, we feel. I know there probably is an element of people going along just to sort of just look on and see out of curiosity or whatever, to see what's going on. But the feeling we've been getting from women in particular is a great concern. And women feel that we're all sort of being looked at in a way, and in many cases a price is made to be paid by women for maybe stepping outside the bounds of what are regarded as the laws, the sexual mores or whatever, and the price is always paid by women.
Well, again, you know, the pace of change is very slow, because just 9 years ago in Listowel, there was a case where a young woman was sexually assaulted by a man called Danny Foley. He was convicted of sexual assault, and before sentence was passed, a priest organised 50 local people to shake Mr. Foley's hand as a show of solidarity and support in front of the horrified eyes of his victim. And afterwards, a priest was quoted as saying that, that young woman had a baby outside of marriage and it didn't look good, did it? And that was only 9 years mm-hmm. ago. So that's why we've had Me Too movements, we've had Waking the Feminists, we've had to have quotas to try and get more women into the Doyle. It's still only 22%, quite a low average internationally. And I think a great deal of progress has to be made.
A great deal of progress has definitely, and I actually was in the courtroom when that queue formed to shake the hand of Danny Foley.
How did you feel watching that?
I couldn't believe it. I thought it was bizarre. I mean, it was just shortly after lunch, and I think the judge was quite back on the bench, and then the queue started forming, and is shaking hands and you know, clapping him in the back and all this sort of thing. And it was just one of those things, you know.
It's not one of those things, though. It was highly
bizarre.
Unusual.
Well,
I think
it was.
At the heart,
I don't mean to dismiss it.
No, I know you're
But again, it's society is still seen to be threatened by sexually transgressive women. Mm. If women start behaving like men, men get frightened. And when, in that case, a lone mother went out to a nightclub on her own, and it was seen as, well, you were looking for it. You were asking
for
it. You to mm-hmm. be sexually assaulted mm-hmm. because you're a wanton woman. And that's what the Kerry Babies. I mean, there were suggestions made during the tribunal by Martin Kennedy, who was one of the lead barristers for
His questioning was particularly aggressive, I remember noticing.
He was tried to make out that Joanne Hayes was not just a sexually transgressive woman, but that she was stopping neighbours and having sex with them, and that they wouldn't come forward. It may have even been possible that men may not have remembered having sex with her. So there was this kind of state whereby she was not just wanton, she may have been able to cast a spell over men, and in such that they felt not only that they weren't able to speak, but they weren't able to remember. And that idea of making her out to be a witch who can become... sexually impregnated by two different men within 48 hours.
Super fecundation. You'd have a better chance of getting pregnant from an alien arriving from Mars.
Yeah. I think you have to look at, I don't want to let down my own county as well. Kerry is a very male county. There's the Kerry Man. It has never been changed, the name of the paper. I've years written about this and remarked upon it. It is an extremely male county. And maybe about eight years before the instance in where they queued to shake the hand of Danny Foley, it was in Tralee, actually, the court case. He was Listowel, all right. You had another assault trial. I think there was an element of sexual assault there, and it was a prominent person involved in football, and you had prominent footballers and with their arms folded right in front of the jury so the jury could know they were there in support. So it's a very male county. But I want to also say that in 1983 the amendment to the constitution was supported by 82% in Kerry South. In 2018, it was 60-40. In other words, 40% only, 60% supported amending it. So 80% put it in 1983, but 60 took it out in 2018. So things are changing.
But not the political class, I think, and that's an issue which Tom has referred to in terms of Official Ireland. Because if we remember the Doyle debate on the Eighth Amendment earlier this year, a lot of TDs were very much against it.
Anyway, to go back to the Kerry Babies, my listeners, they're very taken with this story still. David says the Kerry Babies case has cast a dark shadow over us for so many years, hoping now we're going to come to some closure. Another says, am I the only person, Miriam, who feels very uneasy at the way this new Kerry Babies investigation is going? Mass DNA sampling, checking on people rumoured to have had affairs, and all in the glare of television, radio, not to mention social media. Another misogynistic witch hunt. Martin Galway says, hope the Gardaí team there this week is a bit more efficient than the team of 84. Joan says, it's necessary to get justice for that little baby. He deserves justice. He'd be a man now, able to talk to you. That investigation should continue. The people of Ireland want justice for that little baby. Another, Gary McCauley says, the station church worked hand in hand at the time. That's exactly what you're all saying. I'll give you one more because there's so many. Very few mothers went to mother and baby homes at that time. Most mothers kept their babies. Also, the Catholic Church had very little to do with anything we did at that time. What is the reaction, Anne? You're down in Kerry at the moment. What is the reaction of the people on Valentia Island?
I think they're bewildered. They're absolutely bewildered. So there are people who would like a resolution, but there are other people who think, is it necessary? They're asking if it's necessary. And you see, there is something all the time that's happening with the grave, particularly of baby John. It was vandalised a number of times. The last major attack on it was 2004, and the undertaker changed the headstone to have the words "I forgive" removed because he was so tired of replacing it. So the Gardaí are convinced that the answer lies in Eva Rae. But they don't seem to have any definite lead either. And people are wondering about, a lot of people have come forward and offered DNA and there have been samples, but nothing has turned up so far. Nothing definite. Nothing has turned up.
The people could have left the country.
Well, this is what's being said. And you see, there is another thing about
that. What are they trying to do? Are they actually trying to find out who the mother of baby John is?
And they're saying they're a father and the grandfather. They're saying that with the DNA that people give give them, even if the grandparent, they'll still be able to trace the mother and the father, is what they're saying. So mandatory DNA hasn't been introduced. It could be. There are provisions in legislation. They're saying they won't, but they are going the step further with the door to door.
But all these years on, of all the things happening in our country and all the work that needs to be done, Gardaí, what do you think, Tom Mullins, is it right that they focus on all of this? And
well, I'm sure that the guards want to bring resolution, but they, even if they find the mother or the father or whoever was involved in the murder of baby John, that's not going to put this case to bed. I mean, because it is such an amazing story of, as I said, of what can happen. And and I go back to Martina's point, what we have to ask ourselves is what kind of mentalities do men have today that are leading to a, if you like, a repetition. And we had the cervical scandal, but we need to keep on reminding ourselves that it is possible that similar things are happening today.
We've got Brett Kavanaugh in this.
Well, yes, but we can't. We don't see it. And dare I say it, that Martin Kennedy, Justice Lynch, didn't see what they were doing as anything odd. I mean, they thought they were being perfectly fair. Mm-hmm. I mean, Justice Lynch, as we've been saying, was incandescent with rage. Mm-hmm. And because he saw himself as another Kerry man, as a decent, honourable, respectable man, and he saw the Hayes family as being repugnant, barefaced liars.
And he said that Jeremiah Locke was only taking advantage of what was available to him.
But he also said, he said with this wonderful phrase, that Joanne Hayes put her eye on Jeremiah Locke.
Anyway, my women who are listening are getting angry. Memories are flooding back, Mary, with the madness of the brutal court case that demeaned women. Another woman, Dr. Tino O'Toole, says, listening to this conversation on Having Seen the Mai by Marina Carr this week reminds us that the events of the 80s and 90s are and still pervade our present cultural moment. Fair dues to Nell McCafferty, says another. She did a great job reporting at the time. And one more says, your panel are overlooking the fact that the Cathair Sabine baby was stabbed to death. The investigation was nothing to do with the Catholic Church. The murder squad had been done away with some years previously, and the investigating guard, they were not experienced in murder, and they went for the easy target. Tom, on that?
I agree that the murder of the Cathair Sabine baby should and needs to be investigated. I'm amazed, curious why it is that it suddenly became such an important cold case. There must be some explanation as to why now this case is being blown open again. I think it's it's good for a younger generation to be hearing the story of this extraordinary event, and that they may ask, how did I come to be part of this society that did this thing to women?
But you look at Belfast, the Belfast rape trial. I mean, there was criticism of the questioning of the young woman there. You know, she was out drinking, she went to someone's house for a party afterwards, as though that makes you somehow culpable.
And I go back to this thing about the state. We take for granted these things that the state says to us. So we take it for granted that when it comes to a rape trial, that it has to be an adversarial process. We take it for granted in the Kerry Babies case that it had to be an adversarial process, which meant that one small legal team faced four legal teams from the state. The whole thing was stacked against.
Okay, and more reaction. I'll bring you back in there, Martina. If Tom says, despite the recent referendum results, Miriam, we're still a conservative society. We like to play it safe. Look at how we vote in general elections. Mary in Killorglin and Kerry says, doesn't it sound like a 15th century witch hunt, which is what it was in 1984? Christina Casti says, I was a university student at the time and remember being horrified at the way Joanne was treated. It was nothing short of being akin to the Salem witch trials. Totally misogynistic, wholly unchristian. Katrina says, in relation to what one of the people, it was you, Anne, on your panel said about Kerry being very male county. I'm a woman from Kerry and I'm very happy to read the Kerry man. I don't have any interest in reading the Kerry person. Man is not a dirty word. Why are we trying to remove it from our language? Another person, CD, says, Kerry is not the only male county. Look at the Belfast rape trial, as Martini said, and most rape trials and the number of rapes that go unreported because of Joanne's ordeal. Why do men fear women so much? You've just written a book, as we come to the end, Martina Devlin, on great women past. I mean, when you look back at the Kerry babies and where we are today, how much have we changed in terms of women?
I don't think we've changed enough, and I do think there's a hidden Ireland there, and there are some very unpleasant attitudes which come to the surface. Women are still struggling to get, you know, the same pay as men, for example. One of the first things that happened when Ireland joined the EU was Europe made Ireland introduce legislation for equal pay. And before that, the employers were saying, sure, we could never afford it. And that smacks of the kind of society that we think is, well, almost 100 years old, where jobs were reserved for men. The idea that the man was going to put food on the table for his family, and women didn't really need to work. And those attitudes fed into the 1937 Constitution. I mean, that element is still in the Constitution, that a woman's place is in the home. People really resent that, but it still hasn't been taken out.
It might be changed, though, actually. Another, Angela Holland says, a woman to blame, the Kerry Baby story by Neil McCafferty outlines the beginning of resistance by many women in Ireland to church, judiciary and state misogyny. I'll give you the last word, Tom. Do you think that's true, Anne? That
Can I just quickly answer that? It's not the beginning. There were women like Hannah Sheehy Skeffington who worked very hard, who resisted, for example, that constitution. What happened when the Irish state, the Free State, was formed, and women had been an integral part of that, men marched ahead and left women behind.
I think women's stories were not just ignored and are still not just ignored. I think they've never been told. I think rural women's stories have never been told. And I think in one sense that comment is correct, because Neil McCafferty told that story for the first time. And the tribunal, ironically, allowed the story of a rural woman, a contemporary story, to be told.
I just think that, again, it's a question of her story rather than history. It's a question of that one of the most famous women in Ireland turns out to be infamous because of what the state did to her.
Very lovely. Thank you all very much for coming in today. And the lovely thing, as I said earlier, is Joanne Hayes apparently is doing great, onwards and upwards. Good. And we'll take a break. We're going to have more music from De Laurentiis straight after the break. Thank you, all three of you, for coming in. Martina Devlin, Anne Lucy and Professor Tom Inglis.
Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1.